Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the History AI Podcast, where the past comes alive with facts, anecdotes, and a dash of humor. Here are your hosts, Chuck and Marco.
Hey, welcome back, history nerds and Pharaoh fanatics. You're tuned into the History AI Podcast. I'm Chuck.
And I'm Marco. Today, we're traveling back over 3,000 years to ancient Egypt to meet the one, the only Ramses the Great.
That's right, Ramses II wasn't just a pharaoh. He was a PR machine, a living god, and possibly the greatest hype man the ancient world ever saw.
Also, he might have been the original overachiever. This guy ruled Egypt for 66 years and fathered over 100 kids. That's not a pharaoh, that's a fertility cult.
He was like if George Washington, Brad Pitt, and Elon Musk had a baby, and the baby thought he was a god.
Let's get into it. Who was this guy, and why has his legacy survived for millennia?
All right, let's roll the tape back to where it all started, before the statues, the battles, and the god complex. Ramses II was born around 1303 BCE, during Egypt's mighty New Kingdom period, the 19th dynasty to be exact. This was a time when Egypt was flexing serious imperial muscle, from Nubia in the south to Syria in the north.
Yeah, this wasn't the pyramid-building old kingdom. This was peak Egypt. Wealth, power, and a lot of gold eyeliner. Ramses was born into that world as a prince, the son of Pharaoh Seti I and Queen Tuya. His grandfather Ramses I had been handpicked by Horem, the last pharaoh of the 18th dynasty, to stabilize Egypt after the chaos of Akhenaten's whole sun god exclusive phase.
So even though Ramses I only ruled for a couple years, he set up a new dynasty, the 19th, and passed the crown to Seti I, who was a total boss in his own right. Seti brought back order, strengthened the military, and launched building projects that would lay the literal foundation for his son's greatness.
Now picture little Ramses growing up. He wasn't just lounging in palaces eating figs and playing senet. His father trained him from the start, military drills, religious education, statecraft, diplomacy, and construction management. Honestly, he was basically on the Pharaoh fast-track program.
By the time he was about 14 years old, Seti made him prince regent, which, let's be real, is like giving your teenager the keys to your nation. He was accompanying his dad on campaigns, inspecting temples, and learning to keep the elite happy while commanding soldiers.
Also, bonus historical nugget, Seti commissioned a temple at Abydos where Ramses appears alongside him as a co-ruler even before he officially became pharaoh. It's like seeing the credits roll before the movie starts.
When Seti died around 1279 BCE, Ramses officially ascended to the throne. And here's the crazy part, he was probably only in his mid-20s. That's it. He would go on to rule for an astonishing 66 years. That's longer than most people lived back then.
So from the start, Ramses II was groomed not just to rule, but to excel. He had military experience, spiritual legitimacy, and a royal name that tied him to his dynasty's founder, his granddad Ramses I. He had the bloodline, the training, and now, the crown.
And he was about to turn that crown into an empire-wide brand.
All right, now that young Ramses has the crown and the power, it's time to talk about the moment that truly forged his legend, the Battle of Kadesh. This wasn't just some border skirmish. This was one of the largest and most famous chariot battles in ancient history.
We're talking over 5,000 chariots between the two sides. Picture Mad Max, but with bronze armor, horse-drawn speedsters, and enough egos to fill the Nile.
Let's set the stage. It's year 5 of Ramses' reign, around 1274 BCE. Egypt and the Hittite Empire, which controlled much of Anatolia, or modern-day Turkey, were both vying for control of Kadesh, a strategically important city near the Orontes River in present-day Syria.
Ramses marches north with his army divided into four divisions, Ammonius, Ra, Ta, and Set. Now, ideally, you keep your army tightly coordinated. but Ramses being eager and maybe a bit overconfident races ahead with the Ammonius division, expecting an easy win.
Big mistake. Turns out, the Hittites under King Muwatalli II had played a brilliant trick. They sent in two captured spies, posing as deserters, who fed Ramses false intel. He thought the Hittites were way up north, unprepared.
But in reality, the Hittite army was camped just a few miles away. And while Ramses was setting up camp near Kadesh, completely unaware, 2,500 elite Hittite chariots came charging out of the woods in a surprise ambush.
Total chaos. The Egyptian lines were scattered, the other divisions were too far to help, and Ramses he was surrounded.
And here's where the myth-making begins. According to Ramses' own inscriptions, found carved across multiple temples, he personally leapt into his chariot, called on the gods, and turned the tide of battle with nothing but his courage, strength, and a whole lot of divine backup.
Now, historically speaking, yeah, probably not quite like that. It was likely Egyptian reinforcements, including the delayed Parta division and some Canaanite allies, that helped stabilize the situation.
The result? A tactical stalemate. Ramses didn't win the city, but he also didn't lose the army. Both sides claimed victory, and honestly, both kind of needed to, for internal morale.
But here's the twist. Ramses spun this into one of the most legendary wins in Egyptian history. He plastered temple walls across Egypt, Luxor, Karnak, Abydos, Abu Simbel, with dramatic scenes of the battle. His version of events is like ancient state-sponsored cinema.
It's the equivalent of directing your own superhero movie where you play the lead, the savior, and the narrator, then making everyone watch it in every city you visit.
The irony? We know more about the Battle of Kadesh than almost any other Bronze Age battle because of his relentless self-promotion. It's propaganda, but it's also incredibly detailed military history.
And ultimately, the Battle of Kadesh didn't just shape Ramses' legacy, it changed foreign policy. After decades of cold tension, Egypt and the Hittites signed one of the world's first known peace treaties.
Etched into stone tablets and even written in Akkadian and Egyptian, it was an early step toward international diplomacy. So, yeah, even his withdrawal at Kadesh paved the way for peace.
Alright, so we've seen Ramses in the chaos of war, but now let's talk about the side of him that literally shaped the landscape of Egypt, Ramses the Builder.
This guy didn't just build monuments, he carved his legacy into stone. I mean, if you were alive in his time, you couldn't walk 10 feet without bumping into a statue of him.
It's estimated that more statues survive of Ramses II than of any other pharaoh. We're talking hundreds, if not thousands. He didn't just want to be remembered, he wanted to be unforgettable.
And he had the infrastructure to back it up. Remember, he ruled for 66 years. That's a long time to draft blueprints, break ground, and outlive your contractors.
Let's start with his greatest architectural mic drop, the Abu Simbel temples in southern Egypt. Carved directly into a sandstone cliff near the border with Nubia, it's home to four colossal statues of Ramses himself, each about 66 feet tall. Coincidence? I think not.
It was pure intimidation. Imagine you're a Nubian trader or ambassador sailing north on the Nile, and suddenly, bam, a giant stone Ramses is staring you down like, you're in my kingdom now.
But Abu Simbel wasn't just a flex, it was also astronomically aligned. Twice a year, the rising sun penetrates the inner sanctuary to light up statues of the gods, and Ramses because of course he sat himself among the deities.
Now contrast that with his Ramesseum, the mortuary temple he built on the west bank of Thebes. It's grand, it's poetic, and it's full of inscriptions calling him the mighty bull, beloved of Maat, and chosen of Ra.
You get the feeling he wrote his own Yelp reviews. 5 stars, from the god of the sun himself.
And then there's Pi Ramses, his capital city in the Nile Delta. This wasn't just a royal compound, it was a full-on metropolis, built on the site of his childhood home near Avaris.
It had palaces, military barracks, a chariot complex, and religious centers. Picture a hybrid of Versailles, West Point, and the Vatican, then sprinkle in a few obelisks and crocodiles.
But here's the kicker: over time, the Nile shifted, and the site was eventually abandoned. For centuries, Pi Ramses was lost to history until archaeologists connected the dots from inscriptions and ruins.
Ramses also made his mark by appropriating monuments. He often took existing temples from earlier pharaohs and just rebranded them. slap his name on a pylon here, add a cartouche there. It was the ancient Egyptian version of buying a blue checkmark.
Honestly, Ramses II might have invented the remix. And thanks to all this construction, his name survived in stone while most rulers of his era faded into dust.
So while he may have spent a fortune on temples and statues, it was a brilliant investment in immortality. Every stone that bore his name was another step toward eternal fame.
And guess what? It worked. Because here we are, over 3,000 years later, still talking about him. All right, we've seen Ramses as a warrior, a builder, and a propaganda wizard, but now let's talk about his domestic life. Because Ramses II wasn't just married to Egypt, he was married to a lot of people.
You could call him the original family man, if your definition of family includes dozens of wives and over 100 children. Yeah. Let that sink in.
Modern scholars estimate Ramses had at least 8 principal wives, along with an untold number of secondary wives and concubines. And no, this wasn't just royal indulgence, it was strategy. Political marriages helped secure alliances across the empire and beyond.
But there was one name that stood far above the rest, Queen Nefertiti. She was Ramses' first and most beloved great royal wife. And he made sure everyone knew it.
How beloved? Well, he built her a temple of her own right next to his at Abu Simbel. That alone makes her stand out. In ancient Egypt, queens were often celebrated, but they rarely got equal billing.
Her temple is one of the most touching displays of affection in all of ancient Egyptian art. In the inscriptions, Ramses calls her "She for whom the sun rises" and "Beloved of Mut." That's basically the pharaonic version of a handwritten love letter and a beachfront mansion.
And her tomb? Whoa! The tomb of Nefertiti in the Valley of the Queens is arguably the most beautiful ever discovered in Egypt, lavishly painted, perfectly preserved. If tombs were Instagram posts, this would be a 10 out of 10, no filter.
Now, as for the kids, buckle up. Ramses fathered around 90 sons and 60 daughters. That's basically a small town.
You can actually see some of them carved into his monuments, lined up behind him in orderly rows like they're waiting for roll call at royal summer camp.
But there's a tragic side to this. Ramses lived to be about 90 years old, which was extremely rare in the ancient world. And that meant he outlived almost all his children.
In fact, it wasn't until his 13th son, Merenptah, that someone finally survived long enough to inherit the throne. Think about that. The guy reigned so long, his successors aged into retirement before they even got the job.
There's something poetic about that. Ramses the Eternal King, watching generations come and go. His court was constantly renewing, but the throne always had the same occupant.
And in Egyptian religion, that actually fit the script. The pharaoh was supposed to be the living god, unchanging, eternal, a bridge between mortals and the divine.
So in a way, his long reign, his monumental family, and his larger-than-life image all fed into the same mythos, that Ramses wasn't just a king, he was time-proof. So, we've followed Ramses through his battles, his building projects, and his bustling family tree. But even a god-king has to face the final chapter. And Ramses' ending? Just as epic as his life.
When Ramses II died, probably around 1213 BCE, he was about 90 years old. Let that sink in. In a time when the average life expectancy hovered around 35, this guy more than doubled it. He was ancient even in the ancient world.
He reigned for 66 years, one of the longest in history. To put it in perspective, if you became pharaoh when Ramses took the throne, you'd retire, die, and be mummified before he was done ruling.
Egypt mourned his passing. I mean, most of the population had never known another pharaoh. Generations were born, grew up, and died under his reign. He wasn't just a leader, he was Egypt.
His tomb was originally constructed in the Valley of the Kings, KV7, but like many royal tombs, it was looted in antiquity. That didn't stop his legend from growing, though. His body was moved multiple times by priests trying to protect him from grave robbers.
And eventually, his mummy ended up in a cache with other royal remains, kind of like a VIP crypt at Deir el-Bahari, where it was rediscovered in 1881. When they unwrapped him in 1886, the body was shockingly well preserved. You could still see his hair, his nose structure, even battle wounds and signs of arthritis.
Now here's one of my favorite Ramses facts, in 1976, Egypt sent his mummy to France for conservation treatment. But because of French law, you couldn't fly a body into the country without proper documentation. So Egypt issued the mummy a passport.
Occupation? King, deceased. That's just unbeatable. Even 3,000 years after death, the man was still traveling first class.
And get this, Ramses II's mummy received full military honors upon arrival in Paris. Soldiers stood at attention as the plane landed. That's legacy.
Now, a lot of people have speculated over the centuries, was Ramses II the pharaoh of the Exodus story in the Bible?
It's one of the most popular theories. The timeline kind of fits, and he's certainly a good candidate, a powerful, long-reigning king who dealt with massive building projects, military campaigns, and foreign peoples.
But here's the thing, there's no direct archaeological evidence linking Ramses to the Exodus. No mention of Hebrew slaves in temple records, no inscriptions of plagues or parting seas.
Still, his reign marked the height of Egypt's imperial power, a time of immense wealth, culture, and propaganda. So it's no surprise that later generations, including biblical writers, might have looked back on his era as a symbol of Egyptian might.
Today, Ramses' legacy lives on everywhere, from museum galleries and history books to pop culture. Heck, he even inspired the poem Ozymandias by Percy Bysshe Shelley.
My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings, look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
Ironically, that poem is about the fall of empires and how time erases even the greatest kings. But in Ramses' case? He's still around. His temples still stand. His face is still recognizable. The guy won at legacy.
And maybe that's the most impressive thing of all. More than his battles, his wives, or even his buildings, Ramses II proved that if you control your story, you can outlive history itself. And that wraps up our dive into the life, reign, and afterlife of Ramses the Great, warrior, builder, and timeless king.
Thanks for joining us here on the History AI podcast, where all episodes are evergreen, so they're always relevant, always bingeable, and always here when you're ready to dive into the past.
If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor, rate us 5 stars on your podcast app. It really helps more listeners discover the show.
And hey, got a suggestion for a future episode? Shoot us a message on Instagram or Twitter, we love hearing from you. The weirder, the better.
And don't forget to check out our brand new History AI merch, including some sweet Live Like a God, Die Like a Pharaoh t-shirts. Link in the show notes.
Catch you next time, history lovers.
Where battles are drawn, Kadesh to Paramus as the banners fly, the God King shadow stretching the sky.
Ramses, the son of Ra, the lion of Egypt, the shining star. From the sands to the throne, he reigns supreme, a monument carved in a timeless dream. Ramses, the son of Ra, the God King's power, forced to awe, and stolen in scrolls, his name was fame. Ramses, the God who would be king. Sons and 1,000 wives, his bloodline flows, his legend survives. Cities rose, temples touch the skies, but power fades and even kings die. A tomb of gold, a mask of pride, in the valley of kings his spirit resides. But time is cruel, the sands will blow, Pharaoh's face lost in the ebb and flow.
In the desert winds his whispers call, a god's ambition, a mortal's fall. The sun sets red where the statues stand. His kingdom now dust in the ancient sand.